Ecclesiastes 12, verses 11 through 13 through 14 says this: the words of the wise are like goads, and nails firmly fixed are the collected sayings. They are given by one shepherd. My son, beware of anything beyond these. Of making many books, there's no end, and much study is the weariness of the flesh. The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. Sometimes parents let their children do something that we know won't be what's best for them. Take, for example, my kids. We give them an allowance, and as soon as they get the allowance, they want to do what? Spend it, right? And so their favorite place to spend their allowance is probably your favorite place to spend your paycheck, especially you ladies in the room, and that's Target, right? And so they're asking, can we go to Target? Can we go to Target? Can we go to Target? We eventually give in, and we go, and they want to bring their allowance. And they go straight for the toy aisle, and you probably remember doing this too. And they walk up and down the toy aisle, and they're looking for something that is less than the amount of money that they have so that they can actually buy that thing and take it home. And in the course of looking, they're going to grab something off the shelf, and they're going to look at us, and they're going to say, hey, can we afford this? And we're going to say, no, that's $50, not $5. So no. Oh, man, but I like it so much. Well, our response to them is what? You should save your money. But in their minds, no, I've got money, and I need to spend it. I need to buy something, whether it's going to be something that's going to be cool a week from now or even an hour from now or not. I need to spend my money. And so they look and they see the things that are shiny or the things that are new or the things that are attractive or the things that have their favorite cartoon character plastered on them. And they find something finally that they can afford, and they hold it up and they say, we want to buy this. And even though Amanda and I know in the back of our minds that they're going to be bored with that in an hour, we say, okay, fine. And the reason is because what we're trying to do there is we're trying to teach them something. Trying to teach them a lesson. And in the book of Ecclesiastes, God is trying to teach us a lesson about the world that we live in. And we began to see some of that lesson last week with that thesis statement that Solomon makes at the beginning when he says, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And we talked about the rhythm of life and the sun rises and the sun sets and the generations come and the generations go and the rivers continually empty into the ocean and yet they're never fully empty. And we talked about how it's this unbreakable cycle that we find ourselves in, and that you're not going to be any different than the generations that have come before you. In fact, Solomon says a generation comes and a generation goes. And it was this statement, this start, this opening to the book that begins to teach us this lesson about how we should look at the world. And then the follow-up question, which is, if the world is simply vanity of vanities, how should we live our lives in light of that? Well, as we come to our text, our passage tonight, which is Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 13 through 18, Solomon, after making those statements, then says, you know, maybe there's a solution to this. And so he says, you know what I did? I gave myself over to the pursuit of wisdom. Solomon said, maybe if I'm smart enough, if I'm wise enough, if I gain enough intelligence, I can find a way out of this cycle. I can find a way around this vanity. Pick up in verse 13 and look. Solomon says, I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I've seen everything that's done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is but a striving after wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. Solomon's conclusion after saying, well, maybe wisdom can be the solution is this. Wisdom is not the solution. Wisdom can't solve the problem. Your pursuit of knowledge, your pursuit of intellect, your pursuit of being somebody who the world would look at and say, you are a man or a woman of wisdom, of discernment, isn't going to do anything to solve the problem that all of us face, and that is that this life is, in summation, vanity of vanities. All is vanity. Look, though, at verse 13. He says, I applied my heart to seek and search out by wisdom. He says, all that is done under heaven. It's an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. So Solomon thinks to himself, I'm the wisest man who has ever lived. Surely I can find the answer to this problem of vanity if I apply myself towards it. And he uses two words there. He says, I applied my heart to seek and to search out. It's words that in the Hebrew are redundant in essence, that he didn't need to use both of those words, but he did to drive the point home, to say, look, this was no like cursory glance that he gave at life. This was no like kind of pushback from the table going, maybe I can figure something else out. No, this is a desperate seeking. That word to seek in the Hebrew means to study with care, to inquire deeply, to ponder, to give thought to think hard about something. And then the word to search out, because he says, I set myself to seek and to search out, means to explore, to search widely, to look under every stone, to try to find the answer. Solomon says, I did that. And notice the scope of his search. How widely did he search? He says, all that is done under heaven. All that is done under heaven. And that pretty much encompasses what? Everything, right? Solomon's saying, I looked at all there is in life. And I sought with the wisdom that I have to try to find a loophole to this vanity, to this futility, to this meaninglessness. And I looked everywhere and I looked intently at everything, and my conclusion is that it's vanity. And you might think to yourself, well, did he really look everywhere? Isn't that a little bit hyperbolic? Yeah, sure, it is. But remember who's writing this. The king of Jerusalem at the time, Solomon, who was the most powerful king on the planet Earth at the time that he wrote this. Really, there was nothing that he couldn't obtain, nothing that he couldn't find out, nothing that he couldn't discover. This isn't somebody with the same limitations that you and I have. This isn't somebody who was sitting there thinking to themselves, well, if only I could experience this, if only I could do this, if only I could buy this, if only I could know this, then maybe I would be happy. But I've got these barriers in place here that I can't overcome. So there's still a chance that happiness is out there, but I just won't know. No, this is Solomon. This is the man who could have said, this is what I want. And he would have had all of his servants in the kingdom looking for it, to obtain it for him, to bring it to him, to say, will this satisfy you? And that's what Solomon is saying. I sought for it. I searched for it. I explored. I looked far and wide to try to figure out the answer to this problem of vanity. And we're going to look at that more in detail next week, on specifically what was he entertaining? What did he pursue? What was he looking for? Where was he looking? But right now, what was his conclusion? Look at verse 13 again, the second half. This is a staggering statement that Solomon makes here. It is an unhappy business. What is searching for satisfaction, for joy, for meaning, for purpose, for fulfillment? That's the business that Solomon is talking about here. It's an unhappy business to look for satisfaction, joy, purpose, and fulfillment that who has given to the children of man to be busy with? God. It's an unhappy business, this longing for satisfaction under the sun that God has given to mankind to be busy with. Unhappy. Unhappy. That's a sterilized version of what the Hebrew says. The Hebrew word there means it's malicious, harmful, injurious. Is God malicious towards us? No, and that's why we chose a part of the range of meaning that doesn't apply a sinful action to the Lord. But it's a grave word, right? It's not just unhappy. It's a miserable business that God has given to us. To try to look for satisfaction, look for happiness, look for joy, look for hope, look for purpose, look for meaning under the sun. And again, this isn't something that Satan has given to you. This isn't something that even is a product of you yourselves. This is something that God has given to us. Solomon says, I looked everywhere for happiness. I looked everywhere for satisfaction. I looked everywhere for purpose, for meaning. I looked everywhere so that I could avoid the conclusion, the vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And Solomon says, I couldn't find it. And beyond that, what I came to find is that this is a miserable business that God has given to the children of man. See, your discouragement with this world, your disappointment, your lack of satisfaction from this world is from God. Look at verse 16. He says, I said in my heart. He says, he's thinking to himself. Solomon's giving us a glimpse into his own thought life here. I've acquired great wisdom. I've surpassed all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and even to know folly. And I perceive that this also is but a striving after the wind. It's vanity. For in much wisdom is much vexation. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. That word vexation is a discontentment, an anger, Solomon is coming to the conclusion of. He's frustrated over this now. He's frustrated. He's in angst. He's in turmoil over the reality that this world will not, cannot satisfy you. And he's gotten to the point where he's looked at everything in this world. And as we will see, as the book continues to unfold, he's seeing that so much of this world just doesn't make sense. That human wisdom can't sort it out. And he says, you know what that results in? It made me angry. You guys have seen the news today, right? Kobe Bryant, 41 years old, and his 13-year-old daughter, and one of her friends, and her two parents, and four other crewmen on the helicopter crashed and all nine died. That doesn't make sense from a human wisdom point of view. If you try to find out, okay, why did that happen? Here's a guy that was a phenomenal basketball player, had an incredible career, was loving his kids well, raising his daughter, taking this 13-year-old daughter. She was going to these basketball games with him, sitting courtside at the Lakers games, meeting all these superstars. She was having a promising career in front of her. And then the helicopter that I'm sure they'd ridden on dozens of times before crashes, and they're all dead and they're gone. And if you rely on this world's frame of understanding and mind frame and mindset to try to wrap your minds around that, you know where it's going to leave you? It's going to leave you vexed over that. Frustrated over that, angry at that. And what Solomon says here in verse 13, I want you to feel the weight of that, that he's saying that that's from God. Our first point tonight is this: realize God created this world to disappoint. Realize God created this world to disappoint. Let me explain that and unpack that a little bit, because your creationist mind bells might be going off right now, and if they are, good, I'm glad. Did God create a broken and imperfect and fallen world? Did God create that world? No, he didn't, right? Because we know in Genesis, after he creates Adam, he steps back and he looks at everything and he says, what? It's what? Very good, yes? So God did not create the world broken or corrupt. Okay, we've established that. But let me ask you another question. Did God create the world knowing the fall was going to happen? Yes, he did. If he didn't, he's not God, because he's not omniscient. God created the world knowing the fall was going to happen. Now let me ask you another question. Did God create the Garden of Eden with the intention that it would be the perfect and eternal dwelling place of man? Was it God's intention that Eden would be the perfect and eternal dwelling place of man? No. No. Because God created Adam and Eve knowing the fall was going to happen, knowing that they would be banished from the Garden of Eden. And the Garden of Eden, in reality, is not the new heavens and the new earth where we are going to spend eternity with God. And so the Garden of Eden was where he created Adam and Eve and put them in it, but it was simply a scene on the grand stage of God's unfolding sovereign plan. And in this unfolding sovereign plan, God created the world sovereign over this. In other words, he was never out of control. It's not as though God created foreknowing that Eve would take of the fruit, but it was her own free will that she took of the fruit. No, that's garbage. That limits God. God created the world sovereignly ordaining, decreeing that Eve was going to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that the fall was going to happen, that the curse was going to happen, and that you and I are living in a world now where Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter die in a helicopter crash, and it makes us angry and frustrated. And Solomon is saying that's from God. And the fact that you are frustrated because your dreams have not worked out the way that you want them to, that you don't have the career lined up that you want to have, that you're not in the school that you want to be at, that your GPA is not the GPA that you want to have, that your job is not the job that you want to have, that your parents' marriage is not the marriage that you want them to have, that your car is not the car that you want to drive, that your bank account doesn't have enough zeros at the end of it. See, that reality in which you now live, that your person grates against because you say, I don't like that and I don't want that. Solomon is saying, that's God doing that. See, it's as though God is that parent who's teaching the lesson to us. As we fool around with the trinkets of this world and we look for satisfaction and we look for purpose and we look for meaning and we look for joy and we look for it to be different this time around. And God has ordained this world and set up this world so that we will be disappointed every time because he's driving us to some other conclusion. And so you take sex and you think about sex and you say, will sex satisfy me? No, and too much of it is going to kill you and disease many people that you come into contact with. Yes. Alcohol, is that going to satisfy me? No. In fact, too much of that is going to destroy your life and then kill you. Success, is that going to satisfy you? No, because you're never going to be able to get enough. You're always going to want more success. There's always going to be somebody that's more successful than you are. Wealth, see the above. You're always going to want more. Relationships, no. There is no such thing as the perfect marriage where you will never be disappointed by your spouse. I've gotten close, but it doesn't exist. Relationships will disappoint you. Your dream marriage will disappoint you. How about intellect? No. Why? Because there's always going to be somebody in the room who's smarter than you are. See, Solomon's realization is that he's looking around at all these things, and then he makes a brilliant call. Solomon's wisdom is seen in verse 13 here when he says, God, that's from you. I get this now. This is a miserable business that you've given mankind to be busy with, to look for meaning and fulfillment and purpose in a world where the conclusion is, correctly, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Because he's driving us to a different conclusion. He's driving us to a different pursuit. Solomon says, after this is an unhappy business that God has given to us, he says this, he says, I've seen everything that's done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after the wind. God has created a world to lead you to that conclusion. He's created a world to disappoint you because he does not want you to be satisfied with this world. Remember the question of chapter 1, verse 3? He says, what does a man gain from all the toil at which he toils under the sun? All the work at which he works, what does he gain from that? And the answer is implied what? Nothing. There's nothing left over at the end of that. I mean, to put it in very stark and cold and applicable terms right now, you consider Kobe Bryant's legacy and wealth, and how is that benefiting him right now? Nothing. Not one iota. And you think to yourself, well, his legacy is benefiting his wife. Yeah, we're not talking about his wife. We're talking about him. Well, his wealth is benefiting his family. We're not talking about his family. We're talking about him. Well, his reputation in the NBA, statues and arenas will be named. We're not talking about any of that. We're talking about him. And none of that matters to him right now. What does a man gain after all the toil which he toils? Nothing. Solomon's supporting that conclusion in verse 14 when he says, look, I've looked everywhere. I've considered it all, and it's but striving after the wind. You say, wow, isn't that kind of hyperbolic again? Yeah, it is. But at the same time, we're 3,000 years removed from when Solomon wrote that, and it still rings true, doesn't it? We still have yet to find the discovery that says, here's lasting happiness and success. And you know that because if somebody had actually found that, it'd be marketed everywhere. In fact, the reality that there are so many different influencers out there on social media is evidence of the fact that lasting happiness hasn't been found, because if there were, there'd be one influencer and it'd be the one that found it. But instead, there's millions of competing voices out there that are saying, hey, come follow me because I've got the key to happiness. It's over here. So we're 3,000 years removed, and yet the same thing rings true to us. At least it should, right? And yet so many times we have the I'll be different mindset. We sit here and you sit here and you listen to me and you're like, yeah, whatever, fine, that's fine, pastor, whatever. But yeah, you're a pastor and you believe this stuff, and I'm going to be different. My life is different. And I know friends who have experienced this, that, or the other thing, and they're happy. And I would say, I don't know how happy they really are, but I would also challenge you and say that's the arrogance of your pride getting in the way of the message that God is trying to teach you. And that's our second point tonight is this. Stop fighting that message. Stop fighting what God is teaching you. By bouncing from one thing that promises to satisfy to another thing that promises to satisfy to another thing that promises to satisfy to another thing that promises to satisfy. Just stop. Stop fighting it and get to the conclusion that Solomon made when he said, look, God has given us this world to disappoint us. He's given us a miserable pursuit to look for satisfaction under the sun. You're not going to find it. And so stop fighting that. Remember what Solomon said when we think that we're going to be different. Remember in Ecclesiastes 1, 4 through 9, this cycle, a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down, and then it hastens around again to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south, and then it comes around and blows to the north, and around goes the wind, and on its circuits, the wind just comes back again. All streams, they run to the sea, but the sea is never full to the place where the streams flow. There they flow again and again and again. The stream is never empty. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is never satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there's nothing new under the sun. It's the message that God was teaching people 3,000 years ago. It's the message that he's teaching us today. It's the same. God wants you to see the world as disappointing, unfulfilling, and futile. That is one of the key components of the message that God is teaching you during your time here on this earth. He is teaching you, he is instructing you, he is showing you, he is demonstrating for you that this world is disappointing. Some of you know that so well. And see, here's the thing. It's not that God looks at us and looks at our desire for satisfaction in the world and goes, man, that is too much. Tone down the desires. No, he looks at our desires for satisfaction in the world and he goes, are you kidding me? That's all you want? That's not going to work. That's not going to satisfy you. C.S. Lewis put it this way. He says, it would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We are half-hearted creatures fooling around with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at sea. We are far too easily pleased. And the problem is that pleasure that pleases us so easily doesn't last. And it leaves us wanting more and more and more and more. Chasing the next high, chasing the next feeling of momentary satisfaction, only to come back to the crash and realize this world can't satisfy me. Depression is on the rise amongst people your age, skyrocketing. And I'm not surprised, because we live in a world where social media and everything else is throwing at you every single promise under the sun of how you can be satisfied. And as you strive for those things, you either realize, number one, I don't measure up to that, or you get whatever they're offering and you go, well, this doesn't really satisfy me after all to begin with. And so then you chase the next hit and the next high and the next identity and the next whatever. And now this whole concept where we have taken gender, something that had for so long been static and defined so clearly, and now that has opened up a broad range to where if you're not satisfied by your sexual orientation, okay, let's throw that out with the bathwater. And now why don't you change your gender? And maybe that's the problem. You see how this endless cycle perpetuates itself, and you guys are the victims right now of the world that you live in. And if you continue to chase it, you are going to continue to spiral further and further and further and further and further into a dark and depressed place. See, Satan is more than willing to grab you when you're discouraged with this world and disappointed with the world and take your conclusions towards himself. Whereas God's looking at you going, yes, this world is disappointing and discouraging and even depressing at times, but I designed it that way to drive you to a different conclusion. And so what are you doing with God's message? What are you doing with what God is teaching you? Are you still fighting it? Are you still saying, no, but I can find satisfaction here? The Christian life, you guys know what it is. We've preached it from this pulpit. It means to take up your cross and follow Christ. It means to die to yourself, to die to your preferences. It means not to love the systems of the world, the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the boastful pride of life. It means to reject those things. It means to say, what the world offers me, as fleeting as that pleasure may be, no, I'm not going to do it because God has called me to holiness. And yes, that is hard, but y'all, it is so much better than the alternative. Maybe your life has been great so far. Maybe you're listening to all this going, Pastor PJ, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not depressed. I don't even follow people on social media, which is probably why you're not depressed. My life is great. My parents are great. I live in a great house. I've got a good job. I know what my plan is, what my ambitions, all my ambitions are lining up. All of the dominoes are falling right into place for me. I'm not discouraged. And my message to you, and I think Solomon's message to you as well, would be this. Wait. Because you will be. Something will happen. You will be brought into a collision course with the brokenness of this world. You will lose someone. A relationship will go south. You'll get a diagnosis that comes back and says that you have cancer, and you'll be 20 years old going, wait a minute, that doesn't happen to people like me. Your parents' marriage will all of a sudden disintegrate before your eyes. See, suffering in this life is inevitable. And the way we are wired is to try to seek out freedom from pain, sorrow, want, or annoyance. And if you're looking for that under the sun, it's going to be a cyclical pattern for you, one that you're not going to be able to break out of. He says it's attempting to strive after the wind to do that. Have you ever tried to chase down the wind and catch it? You say, no, that's idiotic. Right, that's Solomon's point. So too is looking for satisfaction under the sun. It's like trying to catch the wind. Or it's like trying to catch running water and stop it from running by just grabbing at the stream. you're going to grab and pull your hand away, and what's going to happen? The water's just going to be right back there, isn't it? You can't do it. Stop fighting what God is teaching you. Solomon ultimately came to understand this, to understand the futility in trying to do things himself, trying to outsmart God. Look back at verse 15. We looked at 16 through 18. Look back at verse 15, though. He says this. He says, what is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be counted. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. This is where we begin to see the turn towards hope, okay? Solomon here is essentially presenting two options before us with this statement. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. In other words, if you find a stick that's naturally crooked, you can't straighten that stick out, right? Because in trying to do that, what's going to happen? You're going to break the stick. Or what is lacking cannot be counted. If I look at this room and I say, well, I'm going to count that there's 400 people in this room. I can't do that. Why? Because the 370 people are what? Lacking, right? They're not here. What is lacking cannot be counted. They don't exist. And so Solomon is saying, look, you may be frustrated at the crookedness of this world, that it doesn't line up the way that you want it to. You can't repair that. And you may be frustrated that you don't have something that you want, that there's something lacking that you wish you could count. Solomon's saying, it's not there. You can't add it. And Solomon's going to say, basically, there's two options with that. Number one is total and utter despair. Or number two, in light of what he said in verse 13, is comfort in knowing that God is sovereign over the disappointment in our lives. That's our final point tonight. Be comforted by God's sovereignty over this vanity. Be comforted by God's sovereignty over this vanity. This is the key of what keeps us from nihilistic despair. Nihilism is that worldview that says there's no point to my existence. There's no point to my existence. There's no reason for me to get up in the morning. There's no point to joy. There's no point to happiness. The only thing that keeps us from nihilistic despair is trusting that God is sovereign over the vanity in this world. That he's got a purpose behind it. That he's doing something with it. See, if God is Lord over this whole world, then our pursuit of joy and happiness is an entirely different story. If he's the master of creation, the sustainer of the universe, the orchestrator of salvation, this thought should comfort us. Because it's not random. Your hurt, your pain, your suffering, your discouragement is not without purpose. It's not without cause. God is behind that. Not because he's cruel, like a deity with a magnifying glass, and you're the ants, and he's burning us off the sidewalk. That's not what I'm the picture of God that I want you to see here. It's that God is leading you to disappointment so that you will know something better in exchange. If God is sovereign over this world's vanity and futility, we have to ask ourselves, why? Why? Why is it this way then? Why did he intentionally create a world that would never satisfy us? Why did he do that? What was his purpose? And why did he put you into this world that would never satisfy you? Why did he put you into a world where you feel the pain of broken relationships, the pain of alcohol and drugs, the pain of abuse, the pain of just disappointment? Why? Why would God do that? I'm not going to tell you. At least not tonight. You're going to talk about that in small groups. You see, Solomon is setting the table. We started, remember, beginning at the end. When all is said and done, the conclusion is fear God and keep his commandments. Right? Solomon is setting the table for his argument. When I take my kids to Target, again, there are so many different options out there. I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. And I sit there, and part of this is because I've learned by experience that when I tell them, no, you don't really want that because you're not going to like it, it doesn't work. They look at me and they go, yeah, no, I do. It's going to be what? It's going to be different this time. And then they buy it and then they go and they check out and they get in the car. And before we even get home, the thing that they bought is on the floor of the car and they don't care about it anymore. Why? Because it didn't satisfy. It didn't measure up to their expectations. Y'all, that's us in this world. And the Bible tells us, Solomon tells us, Ecclesiastes tells us, that's not without purpose. That God created and set up this world to do exactly that for a reason. The task before you tonight, this week, and really honestly for your lives, is to ask and answer the question, why? Let's pray. God, we thank you for your sovereignty. We thank you that this world is not just a place of random despair that drives us to nihilism. We thank you that there's purpose and meaning and significance still if we think about it correctly. And so I pray that you would give, just in this next time of small groups, just productive and fruitful conversations that these students would be honest and that they would wrestle with these things, and not just during small groups, but for the rest of their lives, that they would wrestle with this reality that this world was not meant to satisfy us and what that means for us. And so, Lord, as we sing this last song and then break up into small groups, Lord, I pray that we would be thoughtful, that we would be mindful, that we wouldn't be checking out, that we wouldn't be thinking about what's next, but that we would give ourselves, Lord, over to your Spirit as you work on us to apply these things and this truth to our lives. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.